Welcome to Sex with Simmery. Frank, occasionally explicit edutainment on the most important topic of all. Sex with Simmery is not intended for children and is not safe for work unless your boss is particularly awesome. See more at sexwithtimmery.com.
Welcome to Sex with Simmery. This is Dr. Simmery. And today we are talking, and you might consider this a little bit of an oxymoron based on the information that we tend to get, but today we are talking hot monogamy. What? So I'd like to introduce you to, I'm very excited for this conversation. I'm very excited to introduce to you Erica Grigg, who is the co-founder and director of product for Passionly. How are you doing, Erica?
Yeah, I'm doing good.
I love it. It's like, I feel like this conversation is just going to get really, really excited because, like, my natural tendency is to be like, yay, and then you're a yay kind of person, and this is just going to get really, really excited.
Yes, very excitable.
I love it. I love it. So Passionly is, like, brand new, too. Y'all just launched. What is Passionly?
Yeah, so Passionly is a robust app that helps couples implement scientifically proven activities into their relationship and really help them have an amazing sexual relationship.
Okay. So what does that actually look like on a day-to-day basis? What would its application be?
Yeah. So daily, we enable folks to flirt more. They can use our messages feature to connect with their partners, send them loving images. Remember the loving images that they had most recently. For example, I definitely take pictures of my husband's dick and put it on there so I just remember it, you know? and so there's that. We enable couples to go on dates, sex dates, and love dates every single week. We've got a ton of romantic, fun, cute date ideas, and then sexy and kinky and risque ideas that are well planned out, and basically they can implement that. Then we have challenges that enable couples to use kind of therapists as well as sexologist ideas to learn new skills in their relationship, like, you know, how to give a better blowjob or how to communicate better, how to argue less, for example. And then couples can, on a daily basis, measure their improvement and see how they're transforming over time with our assessment tool. And so that's the world's first dashboard tool that's built especially for couples and their relationship. Helps you see and track your change and your improvement and your transformation over time.
So rather than just, you know, you read your article about, like, having a better marriage, but it actually is going to be a framework that you can use so that not only are you, like, sort of prompted to do it, but you can find out how well you're doing?
Yeah, exactly. Well, the thing is that there are really a wide variety of things that you can implement to your marriage to improve it, right? Like, you can communicate better, and therapists will tell you that communication is really the thing that you need to do. You can have better sex, and you know, sexologists will say that sex is really the thing that you need to do to improve your relationship. But there are so many different things that you need to do or that you could do to improve your relationship. And just like, you know, if you're building a business, you want to experiment with what works best for you, you might want to experiment with what areas really transform your relationship. And one area might not, you know, might not be the thing that really transforms your relationship from, you know, an 8 or a 10 to a 12. I mean, couples can really take a look and say, oh my gosh, I didn't know my relationship could get better, but it really can, so...
And you said that all of these things are scientifically proven, that there's, like, evidence backing this up. So is there, like, a research team? Like, do you have personal professional experience in this? Like, where is the science coming from?
Yeah, so there's a ton of knowledge base out there. So, well, three of the folks that we have kind of were inspired by is Gary Chapman of the 5 Love Languages. For example, he recommends that we should do getaways and really try those. And his are based on scientifically proven activities that they have done a ton of research around. But we also take some studies, some landmark studies for example, our challenges. And then there's, for example, one from Harl Hendricks, a best-selling author in the area of communication. So those are two, for example, ideas from best-selling authors, in also utilizing kind of scientifically proven advice. But the scientifically proven advice is especially visible in our challenges area. So the challenges are activities, things that you can implement. So for example, just part of one of our challenge activities is to touch your partner lightly. And touching your partner lightly enables you guys to both get on the same page. And I'm trying to remember exactly what study that was from. But yeah, our kind of recommendations are really based on stuff that has been peer-reviewed, stuff that is best-selling, and really advice from folks who know what they're saying.
The lightly touching thing is reminding me a lot of Sensate Focus and the work of Masters and Johnson. For those who are unfamiliar, among the many things Masters and Johnson did, aside from coming up with that arousal model where everybody's arousal cycle starts out a little bit low and then you get more and more turned on and it comes up to a plateau and eventually orgasm and resolution, and it has since been, you know, like built upon, and there's the recognition that some people are multiply orgasmic, or that it might be a circular thing, or that desire and arousal may not be the same thing, and blah, blah, blah. But what they started doing was sex therapy based on the idea that wherever you were having the difficulty in that cycle, arousal, plateau, orgasm, resolution, that they would address it through specific activities. So like Sensate Focus is a whole sequence that starts out by taking all the sex out. Like the goal-driven, like, I'm going to get you off kind of sex. So instead, you start out with, like, head caress that's, like, not at all directed towards getting somebody off. And it just reconnects people in a completely different way. Like, for very, very few people do you actually get to spend the time just, like, touching your partner's face and really thinking about the experience of exploring this body that you probably have a lot of familiarity with, but, like, don't really get to really, really focus on in that level of detail. So is that like one of the inspirations?
Actually, I think it was a different study, but I think that's definitely super important. And there's so much information. I mean, in preparation, I did a lot of research, and so it gets jumbled. You know, all this research, it really gets jumbled. And there's so much content on our site. We are transitioning some of the Get Lusty content from our site, which was over 1,000 articles from hundreds of writers. And so now we have added a lot and a lot more factual data. So it's sometimes a little bit hard to remain aware of all of the science, but I think that's a great point, and I'm going to have that ready for you next time we have a conversation.
Okay, cool. One of the things you mentioned earlier about dick pics, which is like an interesting thing anyway, because like when they are wanted, when a dick pic is wanted, it's fantastic, and then when it's sent like randomly from a stranger or whatever, it may or may not be wanted, etc. But my visceral reaction to that was different than it might have been even a few weeks ago because of all the conversations about the stolen celebrity nudes that were leaked and that sort of thing. So I'm just curious about what sort of security measures have been implemented for this so that I can be sending my nakeds without fear.
Exactly. Well, that's a great question. We have been really, really arduous in our security around our site and have been thinking very proactively about it. We don't really release any information as to exactly how, but we don't want to kind of give all that information out. But
that makes sense.
And I'm actually not the developer either, so I can definitely.
But it's definitely.
We have our developer.
Okay.
I can have our developer talk about it, but we have worked really, really a long time to make sure that our site is safe, and we have, that is definitely one of our top concerns. So we really think that's super important. That's definitely, I think in the light of the recent events, it's the thing that's going on, because the cloud is so confusing, right? But we are working and we'll always, always work to ensure privacy and safety for our customers. I mean, that's definitely our number one goal.
Cool. One of the things that we, you know, the way we introduced this conversation about hot monogamy. So the idea of Passionly is for existing monogamous couples. Is there a reason that it's specifically monogamous couples? Like if there's a poly triad or something, like could they not make use of this?
Yeah, great question. So the thing is that we're built for two. When you add a third into the mix, it can be a lot more difficult. And that's particularly because of scheduling. I mean, it's hard enough to get two folks into the same room and ensure that you guys are spending 4 hours a week together. But when you try to add three, it's just more difficult. We are also in a majority monogamous relationship, and we've kind of taken ideas and inspiration from our own relationship. We know some great people who have products for poly couples, but the issues that they face are kind of different than the issues that monogamous couples face. So we decided, you know, just for simplicity purposes, since the majority of the couples are, you know, monogamous, and this is such an issue for monogamous couples, we just decided, you know, our target audience should be monogamous couples.
Fair enough. So the idea of monogamy here is just simply that that's like who you're aiming at. It's not like a judgment or that you think it's for everyone to be monogamous or anything like that.
No. We feel like there are a ton of different ways that your relationship could be, and there's a ton of different ways that you could be. Conservative Christian folks are very interested in our product and our app. Because it kind of, it does fit along with, you know, ideas that, you know, a marriage can be a hot and sexy thing. But we're not, it's not like you are wrong if you don't do it this way. We definitely do not feel like if couples are not monogamous, then that's their choice, ultimately. It's not our choice. All we want to do is enable couples to have more sexy relationships, so.
So why has it become this narrative that monogamy and sexiness are somehow like so separate and so difficult to maintain? Like what is the challenge that is faced by a monogamous situation specifically that we have perhaps we've created culturally, or it's actually a physical thing? What do you think?
When you get married, there is a big focus on the wedding. There is a big focus on your dress and where is the location. And, you know, for example, I lived for a while in Western Europe. I got my master's in London. And I got a chance to do a lot of traveling. And the way of the tendencies of, for example, Western Europeans, or Europeans in general, Western and Eastern, is that basically sex is good and sex is healthy. And I don't think that's something that we as Americans can escape, that we think sex is unhealthy, sex can be evil, sex, you know, if women want sex and they're sluts, they're, you know, and that's a negative thing. I think we carry on this emotional baggage of, gosh, you know, what if I want sex? And what if, you know, there's so much emotional baggage that I feel like is really embedded in not only our sexuality when we're growing up, and as women. That definitely for me is something super important to identify with women and understand what women are going through in their own wants and needs of sex and sexuality. So that for me is super important, and I think it's important that it's, you know, my voice and, you know, as an alternative of a voice to a man. But I can totally get off topic with female sexuality. So what I was saying is there is really a tendency for us to think about our marriage versus us to think about the sex and our own sexuality and what we want with our life. And we kind of get caught up in, well, children is what we need. And having a child-centric marriage can be extremely negative. And so, you know, Gottman has pointed this out as well. And we kind of identified, no, let's think about, you know, not kind of getting away from this. Well, there's so many different sides of the spectrum. Getting away from the idea that sex is bad and evil, and moving towards the spectrum of like saying, you know, I am in touch with my body. I understand my body. And I have implemented and planned amazing time for us where we can express ourselves intimately and emotionally and sexually. And that for us at Passionly, and that for me as a co-founder of Passionly, is super, super important. So, and that's kind of where I feel like the problem is rooted and where we feel like we're interested in adding value.
Okay. Is there something about monogamy specifically that makes it hard for people to maintain passion, or is it just the course of time? I'm very curious about, because it seems like people usually can have a great deal of passion in the beginning, and then the question is it because we are constrained to the number of partners, or is it simply if you do the same thing for a while, you end up getting in sort of a habit and a routine?
That's a good question. It's a mixture of both. So one of the things is what a lot of counselors have, you know, said, that our calendar feature is a great feature because it enables couples to implement time together in their relationship on this, you know, on a basis that is, you know, exactly when it's going to happen. So part of the problem that couples have is that they think if their sex is not spontaneous, and I have fallen into this trap, they think if sex is not spontaneous, then it just shouldn't happen. Or that, you know, oh, well, you know, let's just not have sex if it just doesn't feel exactly right. But one of the things is planning and actually saying, no, let's, like, make time for these amazing activities in our life. There's part of that. And just saying, okay, we are going to set aside time for ourselves. And it's definitely been proven that couples who set aside time for themselves just feel better about their relationship. They're like, yes, they have more security in knowing that they've set aside time for themselves. And so that's part of the problem. But also, when you do the same things over and over, which is another problem of couples, definitely, it gets boring. And that's no surprise. If you eat a pizza every day for 30 days, you would get bored. You would want something different. And so I think there's not, like, you for example, were here, me as a lady, I would potentially read Cosmo and think about some different ideas. But how would I actually implement those things into my own life and remember how things were? And remember to say, yeah, not only is this amazing to try something new, there's no incentive for couples to try new things. I mean, really, that can be a problem, and that's one of the problems that we've been trying to work towards, is incentivizing couples to try new things and try different things. I mean, if you think about it, you have, for example, a limited amount of time, and you want to orgasm, right? So, I mean, just from a couple, if you think about it from our point of view, a couple point of view, you say, well, it is kind of, it's natural, normal, for the same stuff to happen over and over in our relationship. So, you know, doing the same thing, not only is that just makes sense to everybody, but, you know, it just happens. It's inevitable. So having a kind of source of support for, you know, to say, hey, have you tried anal? Have you tried this specific anal activity? Have you tried a foot job lately? Have you talked about communication? And are you guys having problems with arguments? I mean, maybe it's not something about sex. Maybe it's something else. How are you even feeling about yourself and your body? Are you feeling like you have, you know, body issues? So that, you know, for example, women have a great deal of body issues, fat shaming, that is just around ourselves and our own body that sometimes can inhibit our orgasms, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so we aim to kind of answer, you know, all of these problems in a very holistic way. And so, I'm not answering your question.
No, I mean, these are bringing up a lot of different things. Like, I think it's a really good point. Yeah. The idea of if you have a very narrow set of time in which you can get it on, like, it yeah. makes sense in a very efficient culture where we focus on not wasting time to do the thing that you know will work. And if you place this value on orgasm as though a sexual act that does not result in orgasm is therefore bad or lesser or somehow, you know, a waste of time, people are going to do the thing that they know will work. And like, well, I've definitely done it this way before and it definitely worked, so this is what I'm going to do. And like, that's cool for a while. But yeah, like, even your favorite pizza, at some point you're going to be like, I need different toppings, at least like something to mix it up. I think that's a really good point. And the way that like sexuality just exists in a different space than other tasks that we should do, because variety is great in a lot of different ways, but especially in sexuality, because it's a form of expression, and expression can't be rote and routine, or it like kind of loses meaning.
Yeah. Well, and so one of the pieces of feedback that I've gotten is like, oh, you schedule sex days, you schedule loving and sexy time together. You know, that must be boring. That must be like really, that itself must end up routine. And it's actually not. I mean, when you during the week when you tell your partner, I can't wait for our date, you know, this Friday, or I can't wait for this Saturday or this Sunday, or whatever day really, but it's Friday. Friday night is our love date, and Saturday night is our sex date, and Sunday night is our challenge date. So we just get really excited about it. You know, we start thinking about it. You kind of start anticipating it. And it's not as if you only have sex, or you can only have sex during that sex date. That's not the point. It's just, the point is you can think about it consciously on that date and before that date. You kind of prepare a few things.
There's definitely like the joy in the anticipation itself. Cause I mean, like when you're first dating, you schedule where you're going to see each other cause you don't live together. And so
yeah.
The experience when you're first dating of scheduling time to be together is really exciting because, you know, looking forward to it is like almost half the fun some of the time.
It is. It's actually great. And we now have dozens of ideas. We have around 50 ideas, including around 10 role plays. So role play ideas, you know, ideas on where you can, you know, what you can do to help implement those role plays. Really great, like stranger in a bar. You can meet your partner and just like pretend you're strangers in a bar. Role plays are really fun to do. Really fun. And just something that really shakes your sex life up and just really does something really different. And yeah, it's fun. It's a lot of fun. And ultimately, when you spend time together and you have fun, it's such a positive reinforcement for your relationship. It can sex and marriage can be really monotonous, and it can feel. You know, like if you don't have any ideas, it's like, well, where do I even go? Where do I start? You know, sexuality is so complicated. And especially for women, we have this there's multiple dimensions to why we have sex as women. I think it's a really interesting topic of like what motivates us. And as an economist, I came from a political economics background. Want to be in the UN, and instead I'm doing sex, which is awesome. You know, lots of diplomacy there too. Mm. it is a really complicated issue. Sex and doing what you want sexually, and having a sex life that really represents you, right?
And I'm also being very inspired. Like as you're talking, I'm thinking about how much of this it really is just perspective and the headspace where we are when we approach these things. Because I definitely can think of the difference between how to focus on women, perhaps specifically, or just people who shave their legs. Like the way that I felt about shaving my legs when I was a kid, right? And it was like this big grown-up thing and how exciting it was and how I felt super constrained by my asshole parents who were like, no, you're too young because they're big jerks. And like, I was just so excited for it. And it was like this liberating thing because now I'm a grown-up. And then as a grown-up, after like being able to shave my legs for so long, now I'm like, oh God, it's going to take forever. But in reality, like, there's no reason to have any particular advantage. Like, and even as an adult, there still can be enjoyment in it. Like, there's a very arousing component to knowing that the reason I'm doing this is because it's going to lead to this specific thing. Because, I mean, you can shave your legs or not shave your legs for whatever reason you want to. But if it is part of, for you personally, a ritual of preparation for sex, if it's part of what you do to make yourself feel sexy and desirable or prepared or whatever for a sexual encounter, like, it can either be a task, it can be this arduous, like, chore you have to do, or it can be, like, this elaborate, you know, like, part of a ceremony. And so it seems like a lot of this stuff is really about framing for ourselves anticipation and, like, that homework can be fun if you like the class, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and in preparation for this and doing research for creating the Passionly app, we had counselors just saying, you know, you've got to make sure you're keeping this fun, and you got to make sure that couples are laughing. And I think that is definitely something that we think about in our content, in that we want to keep it fun and entertaining and interesting and witty. So that's definitely something that we think about in creating all content on our site and having this be a source of excitement. I think that is super important for us. It's all about incentives, too. I mean, I am a political economist, so I have a little bit of bias here, but the incentive is super important too, and the kind of reasoning why, I think that is super important too, and that's what we aim to think about too, not just the blowjob and all these other things, but, you know, what incentivizes you. I think this is a very interesting aspect of the conversation.
I like it. And I'm also reminded of a metaphor. It's like Dr. William Staton said this. It was the first person I ever heard it said by anyway, was the idea of conceptualizing, because we keep using food metaphors. It's interesting, but conceptualizing sex is like, so let's say I'm really hungry and my partner is not right now. And it's like, okay, so we want to have dinner together. There's a couple different ways we could do that. Either, like, we could go to the restaurant and then, like, just the presence of food might actually put you in a different state, might make you hungrier for it. So you could certainly, you know, you could do it separately. Like, I could have a snack now, you know, something like that to take care of this moment. Or, you know, just, like, sometimes when you're not in the mood, just getting into that space and getting it started might change how it works too. Like, might change how you feel about it. And it seems like giving people prompts can be, you know, like, very, very reinforcing.
Yeah. And actually, so this, and that, I think, just when you think about that implemented on a daily basis, only 33% of women have ever felt spontaneous sexual interest. Like, basically, only 32% of women have wanted to have sex spontaneously. You know, 42% of men really want their wives, significant others, to initiate sex. And women in this social norm kind of thing, and I have felt this too, women don't want to initiate sex. And so I think this whole restaurant thing is really like, men want to have sex, and women, which is, okay, it is a kind of traditional role, and it, but this is really a significant problem for, you know, couples with the husband and wife dynamic, is that men want to have sex and women don't, because, you know, for example, kids and all the things that we are holding on to that we have to deal with, right? And so there's the baggage that I was talking about before. But for women, there's multiple stages of our sexuality. There's, for example, you know, sexual arousal. There is, like, for example, the lowest rung, which is, no, I don't want to have sex at all. I don't want to, almost feeling disgust about it. And then there's, above that, there's a difference, which, well, I could take it or leave it. And that happens a lot of times. And then for folks like who do McCarthy's talking through, for example, sex partners, they really recommended, hey, you know, look for those fireworks. Look for, not even the fireworks, though, the sparks. Because, I mean, there might not be fireworks for women in their sexual need, their sexual intensity, but look for those sparks in there. And, you know, for example, think about it and have sex. If you're feeling different, try it. And the point there is incentive and, like, why do you have sex? Make sure that you're not having sex to just please the other person, or make sure you're not having sex because you feel you can't say no, because you feel you can't reject. That is super important. And as somebody who has experienced sexual assault, I've been sexually assaulted, I have very strict boundaries with what my consent is, and I really recommend women think about that too. I mean, we definitely need to think about where our boundaries are, and really in exploring that, own your own sexuality. Like, if you're indifferent, say, you know, well, I'm feeling indifferent right now, but you know what? Let's start things off, and we'll see where I am. And if your partner, you know, during this experience, you have to, as for example, the male in this experience might be, he would have to be very gentle with, you know, that and during that experience, and really provide positive incentives for his wife or, you know, partner to, you know, try that again if, for example, she's feeling kind of indifferent, which is a lot of times where women are coming from, where they're saying, well, I could take it or I could leave it.
Yeah, I'm really glad that you brought up all those pieces about, like, thinking about your motivations and, you know, still being mindful of enthusiastic consent, even in a monogamous situation. Like, that's certainly super important. And I don't know that, you know, it seems like a lot of conversations about consent really focus on outside of these kind of situations. And I'm really glad you brought that up. I'm like super excited about this right now. And I want people to know how to find you. So what, they're like, okay, I'm sold. I want to get some Passionly. Like, where do they find out more about you?
Yeah, so Passionly, PassionLy.com. We are also on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram at /getPassionly, G-E-T, Passionly. And yeah, we're all over the place socially.
I love it. So people can go check it out and find out how it may work for their relationships. I like it. So yeah. Sorry, go ahead.
We have a money back guarantee. So
ooh.
If folks don't see results, then return the product.
Oh, well, snap. All right. Cool. So I want to thank Erica Gregg from Passionly today for prompting this really, I think, important, like, discussion about, you know, how we just need to, like, really just do it, like, for real. Just get in there and do that homework. I like it a lot. So thank you, Erica, so much for coming on today.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
And thank you, everyone, for listening, and have a fantastic day. Thank you for listening to Sex with Timory. Sex with Timory, the podcast, is produced by Nathan Karuna. Our opening music is by Charles Evans. Our closing music is by Hanya Lee. Be sure to check out sexwithtimory.com, Sex with Timory on Facebook, and tweet at me, Timory_LEIGH. If you're a fan of the show, if you like it at all, a little bit maybe even, rate and review us on iTunes and tell your friends all about it. And thank you.